I'd never like been in an animation studio. I'd never really even like physically talked to an animator. And then all of a sudden, boom, I'm at Pixar. And there's like all these legends walking in the hallway. And I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God.
This is Eri Santos. He's an animator, supervisor, instructor, TED talker, and two-time Pixar intern. He's bounced around many big studios in Canada and Europe and has recently landed at Disney Animation's newly opened Vancouver branch. We're excited to have the chance to hang out with him and hear his perspective on the feature animation industry.
Thinking about AI and all the different tools that are coming out nowadays.
A lot of 2D animators probably felt similarly about 3D animation. Like, oh, you're going to destroy the industry.
Do you feel like not having a degree has stood in your way at all?
My whole immigrant mindset was like, okay, well, I'm in America for one purpose. There's a lot of questioning if this is actually what I want. You get stretched very thin. I had a whole crisis of faith where I was like, am I really an artist? I just worry for the future of my salary.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're really lucky that you're around and you have time for this. I can't wait to pick your brain about your career so far.
Sweet.
You got the Pixar internship in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And then again in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and how it was to get the call twice?
Oh man, it was, I think the first time was crazy. Like getting any sort of traction in your career is very, very helpful. But then getting that, especially at the beginning, was just like, what? Mm-hmm. Especially because I've been kind of doing it by myself for so long, like 10 years. And then I was like, oh, I can't get this opportunity. Remember I was like sitting in a field. And it's like it sounds very romantic. We're like sitting in a field and I was like, one day I just hope to get it to Pixar. And then literally like my phone buzzed and I was like, yeah, like screaming. I was like on my university campus. I started running back to my dorm. I was like running and screaming. Yeah. People are looking at me and I'm like, I don't care. But yeah, it was crazy. And then like, I remember like at the end of the internship, we had like an exit interview thing. And I remember at the time, it was Coco that they're making.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2017, I remember being like, oh man, I really want to work on Coco. And when we got there, half the interns were told, hey, you're going to work on Coco. And half the interns said, you're going to work on the regular sort of internship training thing. But then I remember thinking, okay, I just need to get good enough to work on Coco. I just want to, like, I'm not good enough now, but I will get good enough. And during the exit interview, I expressed how like, yeah, I just really wanted to work on Coco and I was really disappointed that I wasn't good enough. And then they're like, no, it wasn't that you're good enough. It was just that we wanted to make sure that you are cast to the best show that's going to help you grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, interesting. He's like, yeah, so if you want to come back next year, let's do it again. And if you can work on the show then. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like I it was actually before I left the first time that they were like, yeah, come on back. I think that was the year before me. It was the first, like one of the interns from the year before me interned with me, and she was the first one, Hikari. She was the first one who I think was the first intern ever to return. And then in my second year was when I think three of us returned to the internship. So
when you went back, you were working straight on into the movie?
I think they initially wanted me to come back and be a fix animator on Toy Story 4, but then when I came back for the internship, they pushed the start date of the movie by 3 months. And
oh,
I was
gosh.
Like, dang it, of the 3 month internship, it's like, so eventually I ended up working on a short film called Loop, which is like about two kids who are going around in a canoe. One of them is autistic and one of them is neurotypical, and just kind of like that dynamic. And it just kind of, it was a really sweet story about just acceptance and learning and kind of like seeing the world through different lenses. And yeah, it was very fun. Just kind of like, it was my first experience very early on having to do like pre-production and having to test rigs. And it was my first time using a bad feature rig. And I was like, wait, what? What is this? And then just being like, oh, I have to tell them what to fix. Oh, I don't know. Could you make this smile better? And then, eventually we made the film and it was fun. It was definitely, I learned so much. And I got to go on a research trip to canoe around the lake. I capsized a couple times and for art, you know.
Amazing.
That was fun.
Man, whatever happened to those research trips? I feel like we never do those anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too expensive.
Did it meet your expectations when you were over there? I know that you were working hard to get to that point. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like when you left, that was what you were expecting?
I think in general in my life, I try to not have expectations. I think I found, maybe it's because of early childhood trauma, I don't know. But I just try to not expect anything because I don't want to get disappointed. But whatever expectations that I did have, kind of, I felt like were exceeded. I think for me, just again, my sort of path was I'd never been in an animation studio. I never really even physically talked to an animator, mm-hmm. maybe a couple times in my life. And then all of a sudden, boom, I'm at Pixar. And there's all these legends walking in the hallways. And I'm just oh my God. You know, crazy experience. And that's actually where we met, physically for the first time. Yeah. I remember just the feeling of, okay, I'm here. I'm about to buckle down. This is the time for me to just kind of switch off everything else. And for me, my whole immigrant mindset was okay, well, I'm in America for one purpose. On my visa, I'm here to be an intern. So I stayed at the studio. I slept at the studio. I did my laundry at the studio. And there were showers, and they made it really, really comfortable for you not to ever have to leave. And I'm like, there's cereal, there's showers, there's a gym, there's really comfortable offices. And I'm like, well, I don't have to leave. Mm-hmm. So the second time around when I went, in mm-hmm. 2018, that time I was a lot more I'm actually going to experience life a little bit more. I'm actually just going to kind of calm down and let myself see the surroundings. I made a lot more friends that time around. I went to experience San Francisco a lot more. But I just felt everything felt a lot more balanced, you know? And I think, I don't remember if I was leaving at 6, but I definitely was not staying until 3 in the morning the second time. So,
which one do you feel was more successful?
For the way I define success, I think the second one was a lot more successful just because I came in with a lot more confidence, and I didn't feel like, oh, I got this. I felt like, oh, I've done this before. I know mm-hmm. kind of what to expect, and I know what they're expecting of me. Let me just kind of not stress the small things. And I think that's sort of the confidence that I was trying to mm-hmm. come at it. As well, after the first internship, I went to Sony and I did Hotel Transylvania 3. And then when I came back, is when I did the second internship. So I kind of felt like, okay, well, I now have professional experience and I'm going back to do an internship. I'm like, okay, this is going to be, so like, even when we're doing the ball bounce assignment, I was like, bounce, no big deal. And the Luxo assignment, I was like, okay, watch this, hot or whatever. But eventually it just felt like there's a lot less pressure the second time around. And I feel mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun. And I think the other part too was that they, I'm not 100% sure if I can say this or not, but I think the other part too is that they told me when I first got there that usually the internship goes that you do the internship, and then at the end of the internship, maybe a couple of the interns are told that they can stay for a project or whatever, they get kept longer. So that always happens in the last couple of days of the internship mm-hmm. or the last week or so. In my case, they told me at the beginning of my second internship, hey, we want you to stay, and we're telling you this early because we want to start working on the visa process. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was kind of tricky because I didn't have a degree, and I wasn't able to go back to school because I couldn't afford university anymore. So I was in this position where I had left Canada. I wasn't able to go back because I was also not Canadian, so I'm still not Canadian. I wasn't able to go back to Canada to study, and I wasn't able to stay in America because I couldn't work any longer. So by the end of the internship, I didn't have the qualifications to stay. I couldn't go back to Canada. So it was just this limbo of I can't make money because I don't have a job, and I can't get a job because I don't have a degree, and can't get a degree because I don't have the visa. And it was just kind of
nah. Oh, gosh.
So it was really emotional time when I was leaving Pixar the second time, and it was very kind of 3 months of let's try this. No. Okay, let's try this. No, let's try this. I remember talking to the... It's so bizarre being in that sort of world, because I remember talking to the lawyer at Pixar, and she was kind of like, yeah, so, you know, if we're trying to get you this specific visa, but we have to, it was the O-1 visa, like, but we have to make sure that you have, like, the qualifications. Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, an Academy Award or anything? And I'm like, do I have an Academy Award?
Were you, like, 19 at this
point? I was, like, like 20, 21, and I'm like... what? Do I have an Academy? No, I don't have an Academy.
It's in the mail.
It's but... in the, yeah, it's got lost in transit and the customs and the, you know. But I was like, no, I don't have an Academy Award. I chuckled and she was straight faced and I'm like, oh, she's serious. No, I don't. I don't have one. So she's like, okay, well, yeah, it might be a bit tricky to get you a visa. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Okay. All right. Okay. Know. I'll give me a few years. I'll come back with an Academy Award. But
yeah.
Yeah, like leaving Pixar was so, yeah, it was so sort of like.
So is that the main reason why? It was just like a.
The visa. Yeah, it definitely was. And I think that, I mean, that's what they told me. So I would take that. But yeah, it definitely was just timing at that time. But
I didn't actually realize that you didn't have a degree. That's a really mm-hmm. interesting point to bring up, because there's a lot of people who are under the impression that they need a degree to get into animation or do any kind mm-hmm. of stuff like that. Do you feel like not having a degree has stood in your way at all? Besides that Pixar moment, which I guess it did.
I think it stood in my way in that initial instance. Luckily, I have British citizenship, so I went back to the UK and there's tons of work in London, so I didn't have to worry too much about that. Not having a degree has never stopped me from getting into the industry. The only thing that kind of having a degree has sort of been a detriment to me is when it comes to visa stuff. So, and it's something I've kind of talked to a lot of different people about, where it doesn't hinder you from progressing in the industry. However, it really, really does affect your mobility. You know, and I think mm-hmm. like as an artist, especially early on in your career, and for some people it kind of lasts their entire career, you move around a lot. Like I know someone who's been in London, California, Vancouver, Australia, New Zealand, and it's just like they're moving every year or so, and I'm mm-hmm. like, that's, I think they have a degree, so I think it's that helps them sort of do that mobility. But mm-hmm. then at the end of the day, if you get enough experience and get enough sort of notoriety in the industry, then you can start, then you can get visas a lot easier. From my understanding, the trickiest place to get a visa is the U.S. Mm-hmm. At least in my experience, it has been. But then Canada is a lot more forgiving about that kind of stuff. Like if you have a certificate or something, or if you like, I think like Anim School works for certification. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it's only been mobility so far.
Yeah, it hasn't affected you much because you've worked at Pixar, Sony, NBC, DNEG. Cinesite,
a lot of places,
and I'm not even mentioning the smaller ones that we're not as familiar with. Something came up, like popped up to me when I was looking at your history, and it was that you've been bouncing around quite a bit between mm-hmm. studios. Is there something specific that you're searching for that you haven't necessarily found, or maybe you found already at this latest gig? Or
when I started out at Pixar and then went to Sony, and I left Sony the first time because they didn't keep me, so that wasn't my choice. But then I remember being like, I'm never going to have a studio not want to keep me anymore. And then when I went to the UK eventually, I kind of was just, my initial thought leaving Pixar a second time was like, I want to go back to Pixar. That's my goal. That's all I care about. Pixar, you know? And then it wasn't until like, I think 2 or so years after leaving that I was like, wait a second, there's so much world outside just that one studio. And like what I realized was it just felt very, very cool to me being able to just work with great people and being in great environments and work on cool projects, as opposed to just like trying to work on at this one place just because I've always wanted to work at that one place. And I think that for me in my personal experience, that felt very limiting to me, and I didn't want to be limited just by like, oh, I just want this one thing. I'm not going to let myself want anything else. But initially, I was just searching for a way to get back to Pixar. And then after that, I kind of started coming back to a place of just like, you know what? I just want to I just want to find more comfort and happiness in the way. And I think, like, I worked in VFX for a little bit, and, like, I really enjoyed it. I met some great people, but I didn't really want to work in VFX. I wanted to work in feature. Went over to DNEG, worked in that feature, but that was a whole experience working there. And I was like, I have no shame or no ill will towards DNEG or anything, but I did not have the best experience there. And then when I left to go to Jellyfish, was just like such a dream to work at. Like, it was just so, like, everyone there felt like they cared, you know, and like the CEO knew my name, and I'm like, I could talk to him, and he was very, very comfortable. And like, at the time, you know, my lead was a good friend of mine, so we just kind of like shot the shit all the time. It was kind of like, you know what, hey, here's notes, let's go to the bar. And it was very, you know, very just comfortable. And it just felt like, for all intents and purposes, it kind of felt like a paid vacation I got to do animation. I got to do like what felt like animation tests, and like, it was really complicated work that I was kind of given, but it was a lot of fun. And it just kind of felt like what you would imagine working in an animation studio should feel like. I'm just like, yeah, let's just like have fun and let's just like do stuff and all that. So, and then coming back to, I left Jellyfish because I was kind of wanting to move on from London, in a sense. And at the time, I was talking to Animalogic and Sony. I was Animalogic for, I don't remember the name of the project, but then Sony for Spider-Verse 2. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I came back for that. And that was, again, a whole other experience. Again, lessons you learn that make you a better person, in my opinion. So
there seems to be some juicy information in there that you've omitted.
I don't know what you're saying. I'm very open about, like, I feel like every place I've worked has kind of taught me something. And I feel like when I worked at MPC, that was a place where I was working in VFX, and it felt like animating with handcuffs. In the sense that they're like, oh, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do squash or stretch, you can't do this, you have to use reference. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I have to learn to animate like this. Oh, this is kind of fun. That's cool. You know, and it felt like, okay, having to like figure that out felt like it was a lot of fun. And then I learned how to kind of, when you're given a small box, learning how to kind of like push up against
the most of it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then working at DNEG taught me, kind of like broke down the illusion of like, oh, the producer, oh, the director, oh. It was kind of like, oh, no one knows what they're doing. I get it. Cool. So let's just, where everyone's just kind of like trying their best. And like, that to me kind of really, really hit home. That I was just like, obviously people are very professional and they knew what they're doing, but it felt very like, we're all just trying to make this thing and we have to pivot. We constantly have to pivot. Okay, we'll pivot, you know? And then Jellyfish kind of just taught me how to just swing and miss and then swing again, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like one of those things where I was giving shots that were very easy to me. I was giving shots that were the hardest in my career, you know, mm-hmm. I've ever, not even just my career, hardest shot I've ever had to animate in general. And I remember very clearly, like, there's one shot that I did on Spirit at Jellyfish that was just like crazy. And like, when the director was launching it to me, he was like, yeah, so basically what's gonna happen is that there's three horses and there's three people riding the horses, but then one of them doesn't know how to ride the horse, so like the horse is like, you know, the girl's like flipping on the back of the horse and spinning around, and the horse is like galloping backwards and hitting bumping into the other horse. And I'm like, okay, cool. Went back to my desk and I was just like, all right, okay, how are we gonna do this? And then I did my blocking. And then it was just like spheres and all that kind of stuff. And I showed it to my lead and he's like, yeah, look, it looks good. Keep going. And I'm like, okay, are you sure? All right. And I start to put the real characters in there. And then as the real characters are in there, I'm starting to think like, oh shit. This is not good. I can't do this. This is not going to look good. So I go to my lead and I'm like, hey, I can't do this. And he's like, no, you can. You're good. And I'm like, No, I don't think you realize I'm not capable of doing the shot. And he's like, nah, you're good. Just keep going. And I'm like, okay. Eventually, like, I splined it out and I got something that felt fine to me. And like, I showed it to the directors, and the director was like, holy shit, you actually did it. And I was like, what? you launched me into something that you didn't think was possible. And he's like, yeah, well, good for you. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that felt really great. And that felt really kind of like, as long as you, that kind of taught me a lesson. Just like, as long as you just plan enough, and as long as you just kind of, you know, use sense, like something can kind of eventually look good eventually, you know. And I think like part of that too is just kind of really leaning on the people around me. Like I didn't animate 100% by myself. I made sure that like I got everyone's eyes and I got everyone's notes, and it wasn't just my lead and me. I made sure to kind of like spread that around and make it everyone's fault if it didn't turn out.
Yeah, that's the main thing. It's
culpability.
It wasn't just me, it's all of us.
Everyone fucked up. But that was a great lesson for me, and it was fun. And then Spider-Verse was just a lesson in patience. A lesson in just like the thing that kind of like gave me a lot of sort of like peace and calm was thinking like, oh yeah, well, the first one was worse. And I started talking to people that were on the first one. I'm like, yeah, but the first one was worse, right? And they're like, what? No, this is way worse. And I'm like, great. I mean, I heard all these horror stories about the first one, but this is, okay, that makes sense. Because I'm like, am I just really weak, or is this really hard? But like, again, it just like, it, you know, it taught me a lot in just patience. And I think like,
could you outline what were like the hardest parts of it?
Of the project?
If you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah, that. I mean, for me, I admittedly left early. Like, I was on a project for like 18 months, but I left early still, which I think was like the 6 month before the end. Mm-hmm. But what I found was really kind of difficult was just change. And that was the first time that I had dealt with change that much. Whereas it's like, I made a shot and then it goes on hold. And then I have to reanimate the shot slightly differently. Okay. And it goes on hold again, gets cut, gets back in, reanimate it slightly differently. And then, you know, just mm-hmm. kind of added. So all in all, I think I animated, I'm not even sure. I think I did maybe 30 seconds of footage or something, like 30 to a minute of footage, but over the course of a year and a half. So it was just like a really slow burn. And
but you animated that 30 seconds like 5 times.
Yes, exactly. It was like 30 seconds over and over yeah. and over. And it got to a point where there's a few shots that I was doing. And then like my lead at the time was like, oh, do you want to finish the shot? And I'm like, no, I'm so sorry. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to think about the same idea differently, you know? Mm-hmm. And then another animator animated it slightly differently. And then the director's like, yeah, that looks great. And I'm like, cool. Maybe it was just me. And again, it was just like also not being so precious with my work. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not the best animator in the world, and I don't think I have the best, you know, I don't think I have the best sensibilities for everything. So like, maybe a shot just wasn't for me, and like, that's totally fine. Like, I will definitely not be like, oh, it's because of other people, you know. But
that is such an important point. I'm sorry to stop you, absolutely. But like, that's like something that I think we don't really necessarily realize when we first start out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like you start out wanting to be the best, and you're like really pushing yourself, and you want to own every shot you get, and like, and you take like all those losses so personally. Mm-hmm. when a shot gets reassigned or something, or you're not necessarily hitting it out of the park every time. Mm-hmm. And that really affects your mental health as an artist, like in the long run. Learning to disassociate yourself a little bit from it, and realizing you're a person that is also affected by your surroundings, mm-hmm. is really important.
Yeah, and I think like that on that same point of like, I definitely felt the first time I got a shot cut, I thought that it was because of me. And I'm like, oh man, they hated my shot. Why would they do that? But then like, it's not like filmmaking is never about you. It's right. about making, it should be about making the story the best it possibly can, you mm-hmm. know? And like, it's very, very, very rarely personal, you know? Like, there's very rare occasions that someone's going to be like, I don't like that person, and that's why I'm going to recast that shot.
Mm-hmm.
If it is,
you probably don't want to be in that project
exactly.
anyway.
Exactly. You probably don't want to be at that studio. You don't want to be with that project. You know, they don't want to be working with those people. And that's not your... Again, that's also not your fault if someone mm-hmm. else doesn't like you, unless, you know, you stink. But, like, you know, I think it's important just to remember that it's not about you. Just let yourself feel what you need to feel. If you feel upset by it, feel upset. Feel upset for a few hours or feel upset for 10 minutes. Just feel upset and then move on. Don't mm-hmm. harbor that resentment because it's going to get in the way of your work, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really important to kind of like not stifle your feelings, but also don't live there, you know? Mm-hmm. It's important to feel what you need to feel and just like
move on.
Yeah.
You've had a super successful career so far. You've gotten into that supervisor role super early in your career. How do you deal with those animators or coworkers that have more experience than you within your team? Like, how do you manage that?
I have a job to do.
Right.
And I'm like, please don't get in the way of me doing my job. And like, but at the same time, I'm also relatively young. And I think, I started working when I was 19. I've been working for 7 years now. So like I'm 26 right now. And it's something that I earlier on in my career, I was very, very, very self-conscious of my age. And I never wanted anybody to know how old mm-hmm. I was. And I was just like, I really want to make sure that I'm like, you know, if people find out how old I am, they're going to disrespect me and they're going to like, blah, blah. And there was a lot of situations that happened earlier on in my career where I remember the first time I went out to the bar with some, like the first time I went out to the bar with some of my coworkers, I ordered a cider and this one guy was like, oh, of course a young guy would order an apple juice. Oh, look at you a little bit. And I'm like, okay. Single tear. But I remember just like, again, this like carrying around that as like a, it felt like a mark on me. I'm like, oh, I don't want anyone to know how old I am because then they're not going to treat me as an equal, you know?
Yeah.
Eventually got to a place where it's like, yeah, I'm 24. So what? Move on. Let's do our job, you know? So I kind of take that same attitude to this role that I have. Like there's like, I'm working with people that I have admired for like a decade, you know? And yeah. it's very, very surreal. And it's very surreal to be giving those sort of people notes. And it's kind of like, you could do this if you want, I don't know, but like, you know, but at the same time, it's kind of like, no, I was hired into this position for a reason. I have to trust that. If I don't trust myself, I have to trust that, you know, if that person hired me, they must see something that if I don't feel I'm supposed to be in that position, at least they see something that I don't see. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to trust their eye more than I do mine, you know, mm-hmm. At the same time, every artist has their own opinions. They have their own voice. They have their own perspective. I have my own perspective, I have my own voice, and I have my own opinion, and it's important that I kind of bring that to my job. Mm-hmm. No, my opinion is not best, their opinion is not best. I think our opinion together makes the best product, and I think that's kind of like what it's about for me. It's like, if you're going to waste time in being like, oh, I have more experience than you, then like, cool. Do you want to get it out? Do you want a cookie? Like, what do you want? Like, let's move on past that and let's do our job, you know?
Yeah.
And I really think it's important just to not let things that are out of your control affect what is in front of us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You seem like such a confident person, like just the way that you like interact with others and the way you speak about your work. Did you ever like experience imposter syndrome?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I experienced imposter syndrome on a daily basis. I think like, I experience imposter syndrome when things are going well. I'm like, kind of like, everyone's clapping and I'm like,
waiting for the earthquake.
Like, when are they going to realize that I'm not, I'm actually just some kid who doesn't know what he's talking about. And I think like, I had a really good talk with my Hoka where, as I was stepping into this role and like we, as the supervisors at Disney, they kind of run their own rounds and we, you know, artists run the work and we give notes. I remember very clearly the very first round session that we had and I'm giving notes and I'm just kind of like, do you know what I mean? You know, and then he kind of like took me to the side and he's like, fake it. And I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, yeah, just, if you're not 100% confident with the note, just give it. And if it's wrong, it's wrong. And then you pivot after that. But don't be afraid. Like, just, I would love for you to work on speaking with more confidence. I'm like, okay, you know. So the amount of times that I've been like, yeah, let's lower the eyelids and it's going to look a lot better. And it's kind of like, okay, cool. And they're like, does that make sense? They're like, yeah, it's a good note. And I'm like, mm-hmm, next. But I definitely think, but there's also a lot of times where it's like, oh, no, I do think this is going to make it better because of the experience that I've had. Like, I've done XYZ sort of shot tons of times, and I think that, you know, that it's my opinion that, like, if you do this, it'll make the shot feel a lot sweeter or make the shot feel more appeal or whatever. I also think, like, it's important for me to, like, one of the other things that Malcolm Pierce, our creative director, said to me was, like, it's important to lean into what you are strong at doing. And then lean on others for what they are strong at doing. So we have an incredible supervising team at Disney, and I'm very, very lucky to be part of it. And like, we have Graham Silva, who's an incredible draftsman. Like, he draws like crazy. And Michaela Pfeiffer, she's amazing with body mechanics, and she's really, really great at just kind of like finding a nice sort of the most simplified performance. And then Juan Acosta, he's great with technical stuff, and he's kind of like a master of all trades, and it's just really, really kind of great to be part of that. And for me, I just feel like, okay, well, what I feel I'm strongest at is this performance. What I feel like I'm strongest at is just like cleaning up a performance, cleaning up a piece of animation. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I just kind of lean on a lot of the times. It's like, okay, well, I'm looking at a shot. Is this the cleanest way it can be? Is this the cleanest performance? Is this the cleanest whatever thing it can be? And this kind of continues to strengthen that. And then if I'm like, hey, I'm not sure if this appeal works. Hey, Graham, what do you think? Oh, I'm not sure if this mechanics works. Hey, Michaela, what do you think? Sort of thing, you know? So just kind of, again, what I learned earlier on in my career, lean on the people around me, and that helps me. That helps me look good, helps them look good, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's all kind of what works, you know?
The hive mind of animation. I love that concept. The team sport. It comes up every time we speak to artists, and it's so important. It's not really, it's also something that, when you start out, you don't necessarily realize that you don't have to be the superhero. You have a whole team with you.
Yes.
And yeah, you're just part of the. Yeah.
I think like another thing too that really, you know, that kind of results from, I did a lot of improv before, like I did a lot of improv in university. I did a lot of improv after as well. And that's kind of the thing, like improv is a team sport. And like, if one person shines, we all shine. Like it's one of the things that makes it look like a magic trick where you're like, well, you thought of that on the spot. And it's like, yeah, but no, they thought of that on the spot and it made all of us look like we just like, you know, figured it out. And the thing is like, there's times where you need to be silent so one person can shine. And then like, hopefully later on, they'll do the same thing for you where like they lift you up and then you can have your moment of like, you get your nice one button and the show ends and everyone feels great. But it's important to kind of like know when to be quiet and know when to speak up and know when your voice will help make the product the best. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think like I take that same mentality into animation where it's like, I want to make sure that my voice is being used the most effectively by not just trying to hear myself speak, but then speaking when it matters, if that makes sense. I think that's kind of, the most important thing for me.
Yeah. During your TED talk, you mentioned the concept of chronic unease. Basically, just after working really hard towards a goal, achieving that goal, and then what do you do after when you wake up and you're like, oh, it's done?
Yeah.
Is this your happily ever after being supervising at Disney, basically?
I'm 26, no. I think, like, I definitely, there's a lot of questioning if this is actually what I want, you know? And I think, like, it's important to question all the time, but I think in this particular instance, it's a thing of, I wake up every day and I ask myself, like, is animation really what I want to do? Luckily, the answer is yes every day. And like, but I want to continue asking that question. I want to continue like testing that, you know? And like, I love it. I love filmmaking. I love doing this. And I think it's like, I always also want to continue asking myself, like, not only just is animation what I want to do today, is animation what I want to do tomorrow? And like, the more I'm progressing in my career, the more I'm kind of like, the answer is sort of refining a little bit more. It's kind of come to a place where I'm thinking, what is it about animation that really, really kind of sticks with me? What is it about this thing? And for me, it's a thing of, I really enjoy telling stories. I really enjoy portraying different life experiences. And I really enjoy kind of being part of this team that creates a product that kind of like has a message sometimes not, you know, once I've kind of figured that out, like that's what I'm actually striving for. that makes animation feel like a vehicle for them. Like, okay, well, this is where it is now, and like what's next for me? I don't know. Let's see. Like, and let's, but I want to continue keeping that door open, you know? Like, the first time I felt that was when I got into the internship, because I'm a planner. Like, I love making plans, I love making schedules, spreadsheets, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. So when I was in university, or when I was getting into university, I like set out a spreadsheet to be able to intern at Pixar by 30. And I'm like, okay, cool. So if I do this year, I'm going to do this. I learn how to do this, and I talk to this person, go to this conference, blah, 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 you know? And then boom, 19, it happened. And I was like, okay, cool. Next thing, I want to be able to be a supervisor by 30. Okay, cool. So by the time I do this, I'll go to work here, blah, 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 blah. 25, that happened. And I'm like, okay, what's, you know what I mean? So I think like what I've kind of experienced is an incredible amount of luck, an incredible amount of like very, very helpful timing in my career. But also it's just kind of like, okay, well, I want to continue kind of making these goals, making these plans, but then seeing how, it's not even about like how early I can do it. It's just how effective I can do it. And I think like what I'm learning more of is just kind of not rushing anything, letting yourself be in moments, you know, and letting yourself kind of maintain. And I think for me, like as I was getting into this year, my 1 year, like I like to have a word for the year that I kind of like to focus on. The word for this year was maintain. And I'm just like, okay, I just want to make sure that there's a lot of great stuff that's happened in my career. There's a lot of great stuff that's happened in my life. I just want to maintain it. I don't want to lose any of this shit. Like it feels really good. And I just want to feel like, it felt like, okay, I've climbed really high, really quickly. I'm on this like this tower. Let me kind of build my foundation up to this level and then start building on top of that again. I think like as I'm moving into the next year and the next couple of years of in this decade, I really am trying to think like, okay, how do I continue to push? How do I continue to?
It sounds like that chronic unease that you mentioned is actually kind of pushing you forward a little bit every time.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Because I think like you get bored otherwise. And if you had told 13-year-old Ari, you would ever be bored as a supervisor at Disney, I'd be like, you are on meth. What are you talking about? I would just, if I could just smell and see the studios, I'd be happy. But your normal changes over time, and it's important to kind of change with it. And I think like, If you feel like, and this is just my personal opinion, if you feel like you've reached a place that you are happy, great, keep on to that. If that is your nirvana, if that is your goal, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think that there's, I think that the other side of that that's like a mistake is thinking that I have to keep on striving for something. You don't have to. If you want to, great. You know, if you feel uncomfortable in your position, keep striving. If you feel comfortable, why change a good thing? Like, why get rid of something that like is working for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm just trying to find that, like, okay, I can rest. But knowing my personality, I'm not.
Yeah, no. I'm, yes, not, you're going to get itchy anytime
exactly,
soon.
Exactly.
The concept of having a word per year to focus on is really interesting. I never mm-hmm. heard that before.
Yeah. Hmm. It's like my version of a
resolution.
Resolution, yeah.
It's much more sustainable, I guess, too, because I don't know.
Yeah, resolutions are done in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The average. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a few questions in front of me from our Agora community that mm-hmm. I want to bring up with you.
Sure.
Let's start off with this one. How has your day-to-day life changed since you went from being an animator, just a regular animator, to a lead or supervisor?
Oh, first of all, I don't animate. I don't animate nearly as much. I was doing a demo for a walk cycle the other day, and I was like, oh, it feels so good to do something. Like my day-to-day. So I'm also the crowd's animation supervisor mm-hmm. on the project we're working on. And the position is just very, very kind of, you get stretched very thin as in this position. And, for a nice piece of insight, if you look on Google calendars, it has like insights and analytics and stuff. And apparently I'm averaging 39.8 hours of meetings in a 40 hour week.
Oh,
and I'm like, cool. That sounds sustainable. But yeah, my day to day is kind of playing whack-a-mole. I'm just kind of like, okay, there's a fire, pop, 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 pop. Okay, and then like once they're not popping up anymore, I sit down. Oh, wait, no, pop, 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 you know? So yeah, there's a lot of my job kind of has become like mentor, teacher, cheerleader, support, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's having to kind of switch caps sometimes. And I love it. I love being able to kind of do each of these different things. But I feel like I had all these perceptions and ideas of what I would want to be as a as a lead. And it's kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm going to be that kind of lead that just is always there, always available, always just kind of listening and wants to just ask what your opinion. And I still try to maintain a lot of that, but there's a lot of times where you're just like, dude, we just need to get stuff done. And like, I don't have time to ask your opinion. I'm sorry. I want you to do this and I need you to do this. Thank you. Shut up. Okay, cool. You know, but
Yeah.
I cannot wait to animate for 8 hours a day again. Does that
I was gonna
make
say, do you
sense?
worry that you'll get rusty, or have
Oh,
you?
100%. I'm actively starting to do stuff outside of work now, just because I'm like, I don't have time at work to do it. And I'm scared of losing my abilities. And I think like, I heard this one case of James Baxter when he was souping at Disney. He told everyone that like, for 2 hours every day, I'm not going to be with anybody. I'm not going to be in any meetings. I'm going to be animating. Otherwise, I'm not going to be James Baxter anymore, you know? So that kind of has stuck with me. And I feel like, okay, well, I've been doing this job for over a year now. I'm like, okay, cool. I need to make sure that I'm not getting rusty. At the end of the day, like, I was animating for 6 years before I became a lead. And that's not, in grand scheme of things, that's not that much time. So I'm like, okay, I need to make sure that I'm not, I mean, professionally, that is. I need to make sure that I'm not losing my skills. So I'm like, okay, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna do stuff at home. Also, when I do stuff at home, there's no schedule, there's no deadline, but at the same time, there's no director, there's no, you know, outside feedback. So I get to actually feel like an artist as opposed to, you know, someone who's making this corporate stuff, if that makes sense.
You've actually been pretty active outside of work, even when you were employed. I think, if I remember correctly, I always remember seeing your little animation test come up in LinkedIn or Vimeo.
Yeah.
That were really great, by the way.
Thank you.
How did you balance that time? Like it sounds like you were really hardworking when you were working in each studio. You're really putting it in your all, and then you're going home, and then you're animating again.
I think I didn't, I could definitely wasn't doing that all the time. And I think the way it felt for me was that I have like a bank of energy for animating at work. And when you're animating at work, it's a, you know what it's like. It's you have to do the whole dance. And like, you do your blocking, then you show the lead, and you show the soup, and you show the director, and you get your notes, and you just kind of do that dance. Whereas when you're at home, it felt, I remember the feeling of being like, oh, I really don't want to animate more when I get home. But then I start animating, and all of a sudden it's like this whole nother reserve of energy just unlocks. And I'm just like, whoa, yo, I can do this. And, oh, that's so funny.
There's
Oh,
like
you
a
know,
hump, right? Like there's a
exactly.
hump that you have to get through to get,
Yeah.
yeah.
It's like, it feels, I often kind of equate it to like, it feels like getting up to going to the gym in the morning. Like when you wake up, you're like, I don't really want to go to the gym. Like, I don't want to exercise right now. I want to sleep. But then you get there and you do the workout and you finish, and you're like, oh wow, I feel like energized. I want to like continue, you know? And that's what it kind of feels like animating at home for me, where it's just like, I don't want to do it all the time. However, when I do do it, it feels so, I feel like an artist. And I think like there's a lot of, I had a whole crisis of faith where I was like, am I really an artist? I don't really know, because I kind of think of the job as I'm a professional artist, but there's two sides of it. There's a professional, there's an artist part of it, you know. But I feel like the professional kind of swallows up the artist part when you're working a lot, because again, you're creating a product, and it doesn't feel like, oh, I just had a feeling and I just followed my heart and just created this piece of, you know. And when I started doing more shots outside of work, I was kind of like, oh, I feel like I'm creating something that's mine. Like, this isn't, you know, for my reel. It's not for anything else. It's just because I want to do it, you know? And even I found the same thing, like, even when I was you know, before getting into the industry, creating shots for my reel, it was for my reel. It wasn't for me, you know, and I kind of hated that. And like, what I realized at the end of the day, and this is the thing, is like, when I got into the internship, it was with the shots that I kind of thought, you know what, I don't really want to animate. Oh, my body mechanics piece, my acting piece, blah, blah, blah. I just want to animate stuff that I just want to see. I want to animate shots that I like to see. So I animated a couple of shots that I just wanted to do without thinking like, oh, these are going to go on my reel. And those were what they said, that those are the shots that they actually kind of like attached to, because they're like, whoa, this is...
There's soul in there.
It feels different. It feels like not someone trying to do something for something. It's just art, you know? And I want to get back to that. I want to get back to creating art, you know? And I think that's kind of the way I see animating outside of work. But I also am trying to do less animation. I'm trying to draw more. I'm trying to like, just trying to create other types of things and play more music and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
What differences do you see in animation education when you started out versus now?
Animation education in terms of...
Yeah, as in like the resources that you had available to you when you started learning animation versus what is available now.
Dude, Agora, first of all. Not that I have any, you know, but like, no, there's... I feel like, yes, there's a lot more resources when I started learning animation. There's a lot more resources then than there was, you know, 10 years prior. Obviously, that's just the way that the world works. But it felt very kind of, in a sense, unfair. It felt like as soon as I got my first job in the industry, boom, everyone started posting free like tutorials and like all these breakdowns. I'm like, dude, what? Where was this? When I was like searching and scratching and going to the library and like reading books and like, oh, it's useless. You know what I mean? I'm just kind of like, it feels like I was right at the end of a generation, and then a new generation is like right after me, that like has all these resources, and they're going to be able to create all these different things that I, you know, hopefully will be able to tap into. But yeah, the resources are different, and there's a lot more animation schools now, and it's very cool to be able to see how many resources are available. However, my opinion is that it's now getting a bit saturated, and I think that a lot of people are starting to kind of feel like, oh, there's animation is, a lot of people starting to feel like, oh, I want to be an animator because it sounds cool to be an animator. But then a lot of people not realizing how much you kind of have to give up. Like,
there's also a lot of like, there's also a lot of YouTube videos that start out with like a title of like, you know, how to be an animator in like a professional animator in 30 days. Or like,
yeah, like, like, sure.
All right.
We do that. But yeah, I think there's too many schools now, to be very honest. And I think, it's to be very, like, I also teach animation, and like, I tell all my students, kind of like, I'm very blunt with them. Like, hey, listen, there's a limited amount of jobs. And like, if you want to work at Pixar, great. If you want to work at Disney, great. However, it's very, very unlikely that, you know, that'll happen. Just kind of temper your expectations. Unlikely does not mean impossible. So strive for it if you really want it. But here's my story of what I had to do to get there. I'm not saying you have to do the same thing, but at the same time, like, you need to understand there's a lot that goes into this, and a lot and a long time. You know, you can't just, a lot of schools are like, oh, we'll just do it in 2 years, or we'll do it in a year. And it's kind of like, well, no, you can learn Maya in a year, but then what happens after that? You still have to be able to, you know, get good at the thing. And I'm still trying to get good, you know? So I think there's a lot of resources, which is great. However, the market is so saturated right now. And I think that what does worry me is that it's going to cheapen the job, in the sense that like, oh, well, I'll just get the student to do it for half the price or whatever. That's kind of like, cool. Can a student do it at the same quality, at the same amount of time? Sure. Maybe not, you know, but I just worry for the future of my salary. To be very, very blunt about it.
Yeah, but, for sure. What advice would you give your teenage self?
Chill out. Just relax. Like, it's not that big of a deal. what is not that big of a deal? Literally anything. Like, it's just, I think it's important just to, like, not be so, you know, not be so just uptight. I think, like, it's really important to just let yourself make mistakes. And if you make a mistake, great. What did you learn? You know, and I think that just not being so precious about everything. However, that kid became the person that is me today.
I was just going to say, like, yeah. Like, do you feel like that uptightness and that pressure made you what you are today?
I do think so. And that's a tricky thing. Cause like, I wouldn't change anything about my past, cause I wouldn't be who I am today. You know what I mean? In any capacity, like not even career wise. I have grown to like the person I am today. And I think I like the person I am today because of all the mistakes I made and because like of the contrast of who I was before and who I am today, you know? And I think like I prefer my mindset now than I did when I was a teenager. I prefer my mindset now than I did when I was in my, you know, when I was earlier on in my 20s. And I think that, I hope to look back at myself now and still say like, oh, I'm still so, he was so uptight, you know? And I think that I always like to think about the, what would 36-year-old Aria say about 26-year-old Aria? And I'm like, first of all, I don't fucking know. Second of all, I'm just kind of like, I hope he would think that I was setting him up well. I hope he would think that like, oh, well, we were heading the right direction. He made a lot of mistakes, but like, that's okay. It's just like, it happens, and just continue to relax a little bit more. And I want to continue just relaxing more. I want to continue just not fretting the small stuff.
You know? Do you feel like you missed out on anything in your childhood for being so?
Yeah, I do think so. I think like, especially in university too, like I did a lot, and I'm very, very grateful for the friends that I had, that they were very, you know, accommodating, but like, for all intents and purposes, like I would do my classes. Cause in university I studied math instead of, like I said, math and computer science instead of animation. And I would do my classes, do my homework, and then come home and just like animate till like 2 a.m. And like my poor roommate would, with the glare of the screen. Oh, gosh. But I was just like, I think I missed out on kind of maybe friendships and relationships that I could have had in terms of like, you know, just people I would have known. And but at the same time, like, I am where I am today because of that, if that makes sense. But at the same time, it's like a lot of the stuff that I was doing was pretty toxic, and like the way the mindset I had about like, I don't care about anything, I don't care about anybody, all I care about is animation. Boom, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
However, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't change anything about the past, and I think that like a lot of those lessons I've kind of learned over time, and mm-hmm. I think you grow as well. Like, I was a kid, and then I'm no longer a kid, and like kids do what kids do. They get obsessed with stuff, and they just care about it a lot. I just happen to care about animation, and that's what like made me mm-hmm. want to do it all the time, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I think there was stuff I missed out on, but I don't know if I would change any of it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess you touched on this question a little bit earlier when you mentioned that you were a little bit cautious about like how much animation education is out there now. Mm-hmm. But the question is, our industry is at a crossroads. What would be the ideal outcome? And we can interpret this one tech-wise too, like mm-hmm. thinking about AI and all the different tools that are coming out nowadays. Do you feel like cautious in the same way about those things taking away opportunities?
So my perspective on it is that yes, AI is going to take away jobs. Good, let it take away jobs, but it's also going to create more jobs as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that like my perspective on it is just, again, let's not be scared about this because it's happening. It's going to happen. We don't have a choice. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. How can we do this? How can we be part of the people making sure that it's done responsibly? You know what I mean? And I think it's very, very important that like, yes, we should say no to theft. And like, no part of me is supporting the art theft that's happening within the AI generated stuff.
Yeah.
However, there's a lot of stuff that's not just, you know, making Midjourney pictures, you know? And I think, like, it's really important for us to kind of find ways to be able to utilize that as effectively as possible and make it part of our workflow, make it part of our, you know, our systems, make it part of our, like, what, how are we going to be able to, how are we going to be able to make sure that we're riding that wave? And I think that we're entering a similar, it's not exactly the same because it's not completely changing the medium, but I feel like we're entering a similar thing where, a lot of 2D animators probably felt similarly about 3D animation, like, oh, you're going to destroy an industry. And it did at the end of the day, but it also created an entire other industry. You know, my thing right now, the thing I'm trying to, like, be vigilant of is this, what industries is AI creating and how can we make sure that we're being at the forefront, utilizing it as effectively as possible, making sure that we're in the room when people who have no idea what they're talking about are just saying, oh, maybe we should do it this way. And you can be like, no, that's not how it's supposed to be done. Let's do it this way. And I think that we're at a crossroads, but yeah, we have been at a crossroads before. We will be at a crossroads again. It's okay. Let's just, let's figure out how we can be part of this change in a responsible way, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So
a more personal one. Do you feel pride in your work?
I do.
Do you now?
I don't know. It's tricky. I love what I do, but I don't always love what I'm doing, if that makes sense. And I think that, like someone the other day just asked, like, oh, how, have you watched all the movies you've worked on? And I'm like, no. I'm interested in maybe two of the movies I've worked on. But yeah, it's kind of, I mean, that's kind of it. It's just like, it's not, I don't always create, this is part of that whole, like, am I an artist? Cause, like, mm-hmm. you create stuff that you don't watch and you animate stuff, like the shots that I animated and I've never watched it since I've animated it. Cause, like, I didn't care about it when I was animating it. I didn't, you know what I mean? So it's a tricky question. I do take pride. Often I often take pride in what I do after it's being done. And it's like, oh, well, that I put a lot of work into that project and I'm happy to see that people are connecting with it. And I think that when I see people connecting is when it really kind of, like, fills me up with pride. I'm like, yeah, I guess I was part of something that did something. And I think that it was just really interesting experience working on Spider-Verse because it was so, like, it felt very, very honest. Like, it felt a lot like, you know, the artist wasn't 100% respected in a lot of situations and with the work that they're creating, and I didn't really feel like they were kind of respected. And I think that as we finished the project and we saw it get released, there's a lot of part of me that was kind of like, when I was sitting in the theater at first, I was like, what is this piece of shit? You know? Yeah. And, like, I wanted it. There's a part of me, even though I spent so long in it and I put so many hours and pain and all that kind of stuff in it, there's a part of me that wanted it to be bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I watched it and I was like, it's so good.
Shit, it's I love it.
I love it. Oh, I hate that I love it. But what was great about it was, like, I had that experience. I enjoyed the project. I enjoyed the product. And it felt like I could close that book in my life. I'm like, okay, well, it wasn't even a chapter. It felt like, okay, cool. That is that book done. You know, that is a Spider-Verse book. And then seeing the way that the world, that helped me kind of be a little bit more objective about the way that people were seeing it. I'm like, as people were reacting to it and be like, oh, wow, this is this and it's changing this and it's making blah, 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 blah. I was kind of like, oh, I guess it is a good, oh, okay. I was really happy to be part of it, you know? But even, like, having some distance from it now, thinking objectively about the experiences I was having, I'm having, you know, similar experiences in where I'm working now in terms of just, like, change. And, like, that is just part of the process of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, the difference is just, like, the transparency of the change. I think, like, when you get I'm kind of going off track now, but when you get sort of told, oh, something is changing, but you don't get told why, it really kind of sticks and really kind of stings because you're like, oh, I'm doing this change. I don't know why I'm doing this change, but you know. But then like where I'm working now, there's a lot of visibility for that. It's like, oh, well, this change is happening. Why? Oh, because we're trying to make this story beat work better. Oh, okay. I can do that for you, you know? So I think like it's a lot easier to take pride in the work I'm doing today than the work I've done previously, just because I feel a lot more connected to it, if that makes sense.
Do you think that there's like a theme here where like, so Spider-Verse was, you know, not super great for the artist. It was, you know, a lot of work, a lot of hours. But the movies turned out amazing. Mm-hmm. Do you think there was a way that they could have made it, the experience, better for you and not hinder the quality of the movie?
I think storyboarding the film a lot more thoroughly would have been really, really helpful, because there's a lot of situations where it's just like, you know, it hadn't been figured out. And then it was kind of on Anon to be like, okay, well, just make something cool. And it's kind of like, okay, well, what does that mean? What's happening in the scene? What's happened before? I also think working at Sony is, Sony Pictures Imageworks is technically a vendor of Sony Pictures Animation. So there's not 100% transparency in terms of like, you can't read the script whenever you want. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, you don't get to see all the changes that are happening. And so that kind of, you feel like a vendor when you're working in that sort of project and you're feeling like a vendor. It kind of sucks, because you're kind of like, well, if this is a really important change, let's like figure out why. Let's like find out how we can like be part of the process. And I think that when you work with 900 incredible artists, everybody has opinions and anyone can and should share their opinions. I think the one director opinion should matter the most, and I think that's the most important thing. But it's important to kind of like not just silo off half of the artists who are actually making what's going to be shown on screen, and it's kind of like, oh well, we're only going to focus on just a few voices in the room. I personally think that this sort of filmmaking is a team sport, and I think that we should lean into that a little bit more in general as an industry. But yeah, I think storyboarding the film a lot more thoroughly and kind of in general knowing what we're gonna do would definitely help. But I know things change, the story changes, and once you start seeing it on screen, everything changes. But that's okay. Let's at least know how the movie ends before we start making it. So yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a double-edged sword, like to have really, I have worked on films where they are so married to the storyboards or the previs that you have very little creative input in it, and you're just kind of just doing what is already there. You're just making it look pretty. So I guess Spider-Verse is one of those where you kind of had to give your all to every shot, and that sounds like it would be exhausting if you have to redo it 10 times over.
Yeah, there's some animators on Spider-Verse that they would do these tests. I'm telling you, just like I hope one day these tests get to be seen by the world, just because it's like, I remember the feeling of starting at Sony and then as they were creating these tests, just being like, wait, this is the best animation I've ever seen in my life. Are we seeing this? Like, how is no one like freaking, this is amazing, you know? And it was just like, it was just so unreal just to be kind of like, to have my name next to those people. And it's just kind of like, what? These artists that like are so underground and they're not on the internet, but they just pew, create the most amazing stuff you'll see. And it's just, it's very, very inspiring. And I think like, you have that, use it. You know what I mean? Like they have different types of abilities, like use their abilities a little bit more. My opinion.
But yeah, this is something that we mentioned before we started recording about specific type of animators that we refer to as silent killers, who like don't have a lot of a voice online. They don't really speak up very often, but they're incredible at what they do.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's important for people to speak up and like for people who are, you know, to have a more of an online presence? Does that affect you and your career?
It definitely can affect you in your career, and whether or not it should, that's a whole other conversation. However, I firmly believe that like it's important to be vigilant of the people that are around you. And I think like you don't need to be online to be able to be successful in animation. You don't need to have a presence. It helps, definitely. I think, like, it can help, and it can help you with negotiation and notoriety and all that kind of stuff. But look around you, see the people that are around you, and make sure that you're speaking up for them, and make sure that they get the opportunities that they're, maybe they're super shy. And that's, it's not on someone to change their personality in order to work in an industry. Mm-hmm. And I think that I luckily and unluckily have a more outgoing personality than a lot of shyer people. And something I'm very, very passionate about is, like, making sure that I'm noticing those shy people, seeing their work, complimenting their work, to going up to them like, hey, I saw what you did. It's great, you know? And I hope I'm not making them feel uncomfortable, but I often try to, like, ask their opinion. And I don't want to just give you a note. Mm-hmm. I want to be like, hey, what do you think about your shot? Like, do you like it? You know? And a lot of people, a lot of times, will be like, what do you mean? Do you like it? And I'm like, I like it, but do you? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Let's just, let's move on past that. But I think it's important to like notice those silent killers in your back pocket, especially if you're in leadership. Like, look around you, notice the people that are, that you have at your disposal, and use them, you know? It's a waste of talent otherwise, and a waste of time, because you could have saved that time otherwise.
Yeah. Which has been your favorite city to work at or live in so far?
I mean, it's interesting because I feel like each city I've lived in kind of fit that point in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel when I was in London, that was like my early 20s. I was very just kind of like, yeah, let's like, there's like so much stuff happening all the time, and this kind of life just kind of finds you. And it felt very fun. And I think, like, an example of what it would be like is one day I went to go watch a play, and like after the play, it was a really good play, and I was walking through the streets, and all of a sudden I stumble upon an opera that's just like in the middle of a square, and I'm like, what? And like, I watched it, then I watched the opera, and I'm like, this is so cool. And I start walking on, and there's like people just break dancing, and I'm like, God, this is so, like, what is this place, you know? And it just felt very alive, and it felt like kind of life just comes at you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like moving here, it's a lot like, you know, my career is a lot slower. It's a lot kind of more chill. People go hiking every weekend. And it's just very like, you have to go out and find life. But I feel like there's still lots of stuff happening. You just kind of have to find it. And I think that, like, as I'm in this stage of my life where I'm like, okay, I really need to be a lot more intentional about stuff. I feel like I can't just kind of like, I was intentional a lot about my career, but then I have to be intentional about the rest of my life too, where it's like, okay, well, I want to make sure that, like, the friendships that I have, I really want to maintain them. I want to make sure that I'm not just kind of, I'm not in a place anymore where I'm just moving all the time. So friendships for me, I have, like, if I want to have friends, I have to kind of put the effort in. It's not just going to happen. You know, I think, like, Vancouver's lifestyle kind of fits what I am now, where I need to just kind of put a lot more effort into being, if that makes sense. And I think, yeah. But my favorite place, I think, I mean, London was amazing. I loved living in London. It just felt so fresh all the time. And it felt so exciting and surprising and, like, inspiring. And I think, like, the other part too is living in a place that is very historical. Like, there's cobblestone streets and, like, a building that, you know, they remember this one time I was in a pub in London, and it was like, oh, established in 16, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this pub is older than Canada. Like, that's the institution of Canada. I'm like, that is bizarre. And like, this, the people that founded this, like, people that built this building have been long gone, but like, it's so cool to kind of just feel the kind of, it feels weird to say this, but if like, feel the ghosts around you. And it feels very sort of like, not all, I kind of started feeling this way of like, not all ghosts are bad. Like, you know, everybody dies, so, and not everybody's a creepy stalker.
I like to think of it as energy more than
exactly,
ghosts.
Exactly. This is like such great energy around you. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was a lot of fun, but I'm really Vancouver. I'm now about to have lived in Vancouver for the same amount of time that I've lived in London. And it's starting to kind of grow on me just now. And I'm feeling like it's, as I have reasons to stay, it really helps kind of make me feel a lot more comfortable here, if that makes sense.
Do they still have paid overtime in London?
I think they have paid overtime at Deneg after a big old kerfuffle. But no, because everyone is on salary. Yeah. So it's like, well, you get paid for the amount of work you put in a year, whether it's 40 hours a week or 80 hours a week. Okay. That's not really their concern. Yeah. So not ideal, but you get... They have something called time off in lieu or toil as instead of overtime. So like some companies say like, okay, well, if you're gonna work on the weekend, then that's like if you worked one day on the weekend, then that's one day added to your holiday. So I remember this one time I worked a bunch of toil at this, I think it was at Jellyfish at the beginning, and then for the last 6 months of the project, I just took off every Friday for 6 months, and it was amazing.
I did the same thing at Rodeo FX. They did the same thing at the time. Mm-hmm. And I also took off every Friday, and it was great. I felt amazing.
And it's crazy because, like, I'm not saying this in any sort of braggy way, but I was the highest performer on the team working 4 days a week, and I'm like, that works, you know. if you just have a lot clearer mind,
yeah,
you can do things a lot quicker. And I think, like, that really is it at the end of the day. Like, if you... A lot of animation is sitting, thinking about what it is that you're trying to do, you know? And like, I think if you have a much clearer mind, you can do the work a lot quicker, you know? Doesn't matter how fast you click, doesn't matter how many tools you have. If you don't know what you want to do, you're not going to do anything, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think having more time to kind of connect with the world around you and just kind of be a lot freer allowed me to kind of approach my work with a lot more sort of ease, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by and talking with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure. You guys are fun.
Oh. <Aww. laughs>